Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, evolving your passions. We push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com/welcome to now. I want to piss off Memphis fans. Not on purpose.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
I don't think Jordan Poole is a dirty player.
Moran has come up limping here.
Rubbing his right knee.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
I haven't seen a single play where I thought that guy's a dirty player at all.
Earlier on the show, Tampa Bay Times Bucks writer Rick Stroud. Coming up, ESPN college basketball analyst Jay Billis. Longtime Boston Globe columnist Bob Ryan. Plus, ESPN NFL reporter Jeff Darlington. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Hour number two of the Rich Eisen Show is on the air, which means we've got two more hours to go on this program to come up with ways to quantify just how insane the contract Fox Sports is giving Tom Brady once Tom retires to call games for them. 10 years, $375 million, according to Andrew Marchand of the New York Post. We all woke up today to hear the news that Fox had announced that Tom was going to join their number one booth the moment he retires. And we don't know when that is. We talked to Rick Stroud about that from the Tampa Bay Times moments ago. If you missed that, go to youtube.com/Rich Eisen Show. Just off the top of hour number two, the latest way to quantify his contract, $375 million to call 200 games over 10 years is what Fox is giving Tom Brady. The first time that they bought an NFL package, it cost $400 million a year for Fox. It was 1 year of football. They gave $400 million to the NFL for the right to broadcast 1 year of football. Now that's going to one specific individual to call 10 years worth of football games. That noise you heard of a can popping open was Susie Schuster sitting in for Chris Brockman. Would you pop open right there, Suze, to kick off hour number two of this program?
I got a LaCroix.
Oh, very good. Very good.
I'm make desperate.
Sure,
of
we got to make sure. Okay. DJ Mikey D is sitting next to
Susie. What if it was an Archer Roos wine? What if I had cracked open an Archer
all
Roos
good.
To start
it's
the day?
It's 5 o'clock somewhere, TJ.
Yeah. Yeah. Susie's today. Here. Susie, we should have
thought about this. This got thrown together.
Yeah, but still.
Joining us here on the Mercedes-Benz Vans phone line is one of our friends to discuss the new rules, I guess, that the Division I Board of Directors, as they are called in the NCAA, passed on Monday and is sending out to all of their member schools to try and rein in the collectives, as they're being called, these collectives that are being formed at schools by boosters, it appears, to come up with NIL money. It's like an NIL money pool for prospects to come to the school, which is not the intent of NIL deals. It's supposed to be given to kids once they're at the schools, as a reward, not an incentive to come to the school. I figured, you know, to help us make heads or tails of this is a man who has that legal mind and also the mind of a steel trap to talk about the NCAA is our friend from the worldwide leader in sports on the Mercedes-Benz Vans phone line. Hello again to Jay Billis. How you doing, Jay?
Great, Rich. How are you?
Well, I'm not making Tom Brady money, but I'm feeling good being a Michigan man. Jay, to be honest with you,
well, we're all striving to make Rich Eisen money. The Tom Brady money is the next step beyond that.
I did not know that. That next step, you could pull a quad making that next step. I'll tell you that, Jay. Got to be limber. Got to be careful about all that. So, what did you make of the ruling yesterday by the Division I Board of Directors on how to rein in, if you will, these collectives and what constitutes being a booster in this NIL world, Jay?
You know, it's sort of typical, Rich, of the NCAA. They want to control every nickel that goes to an athlete. And they were dragged kicking and screaming into this by different states that passed NIL legislation, starting with California and then Florida and others. And then with the ass-kicking they took at the United States Supreme Court level, that killed, in the Alston case, that killed amateurism. So amateurism is now dead. And what they're trying to do, then they move the goalpost, to use a sports analogy, to say, well, so now it's not amateurism. Now you just can't be employees, and there can't be any inducements to get someone to go to a school or to stay at a school. It's got to be for your name, image, and likeness that's separate from the school. So typical of competition in the free market, these collectives have popped up, and they're 501c3 corporations largely. And how most of them work is they'll cut a deal with the player. The coach will go and say, hey, we're going to need $400,000 to get this player that we want, whether out of the transfer portal or somewhere else. So they'll deal with the player, the player's representatives, cut a contract, and the player will have to do charity work spread out over a year or two, or appearances or autograph signings or things like that in order to get the money. So it'll be some sort of retention thing. They feel good about, hey, he's doing charity work. He or she is doing charity work, that kind of thing. But really all it is the same as a scholarship. We're providing this so you'll come here and you'll stay here. And when the NCAA says, well, we don't want pay for play, that's exactly what a scholarship is. It's just capped pay for play. And so the idea that this is antithetical to what college sports is about, and all the coaches and ADs are complaining, you know, when they sign a contract and make millions of dollars, it's just business. But when a player does it, now, you know, everybody's hair is on fire, and we've got, you know, something that's going to shake the very foundation of college sports. And the truth is, it's just business. And this is where it's headed. And before long, because I think the NCAA and the member institutions are going to lose any lawsuit that comes its way about restricting athlete compensation, at some point in the near future, schools will just be signing players to contracts, and we'll get on to sort of the normal business aspect of it, and it'll be orderly, and it'll do just fine.
Well, Jay, just to hit this a little bit harder, you know, it seems to me, based on my layperson's view of it, that the board of directors just recast what constitutes a booster and threw the collectives into that, and saying that you can't have any contact with an athlete, their family members, or anybody prior to them joining the school. And that's what they did. Did I misread that? Did I miss something here on that?
That's what they're saying, but nothing is going to come of it until they sanction someone, whether they sanction the collective or you know, with they can disassociate people like they did in certain cases in the past with what they call boosters. But, you know, it's funny, they don't have a problem with a booster. Nobody said, hey, it's inappropriate for a booster to give a bunch of money to build athletic facilities, or it's inappropriate for a booster to give a bunch of money to have a coach fired or hired, which happens all the time. It's only inappropriate when it has to do with an athlete. And what that ignores is the plain truth that these schools want to pay these players because it's happening. And any president of a university could put a stop to this by saying, we're not going to do this, and we're not going to take any player that you're talking to. But they need those players. And, you know, look, I got a text recently from an assistant coach at a place where a player just got an $800,000 deal, 2 years, $400,000 a year, and said, this guy's making more than I am. And you're saying, well, he's worth more. I mean, that's the truth. The player's worth more than the assistant coach. But we never seem to – we've always said the players aren't worth anything. The NCAA has always said that. The players aren't really worth anything. You know, the values in the institution and the name on the front of the jersey, not the name on the back. And when it opened up a little bit, they found out pretty quickly that that was a lie. These players have tremendous value in the marketplace. And as soon as it opens up a little bit, that value is being realized. And it's going to be realized even more. This is not the end of it. It's just the beginning.
Jay Billis here on the Rich Eisen Show. I've had, leading up to the NFL draft, Nick Saban and Lane Kiffin and Jimbo Fisher and Mack Brown, just to name four college coaches. By the way, I'm not just name dropping. I'm just pointing out that I had these folks on prior to the draft, asked them all about this subject. Every last one of them said that there's no rules and that it's not fair. Mack Brown even said he had a player come in and said, hey, I've been offered this much at another school, you match it, I'm coming here. So don't you? Shouldn't there be some sort of rules around the NIL deal, or you just think it should be free market, just go for it, everybody? Jay?
Well, absent agreement with the players collectively, whether through a trade association or some sort of collective bargaining with the union, what rules can you put in that aren't going to run afoul of federal antitrust law? Like, do any of these coaches, feel similarly when an assistant comes in and says, "Hey, look, I got an offer from another school for more money, and if you can match it, great. If not, I'm going to take this offer." You know, they call that business. You know, when a player does it, you know, the coaches aren't used to it. They've ruled with an iron fist for all this time, and they basically had a free ride with regard to players, and they don't have that anymore. But you never saw these coaches say, "Well, wait a minute, put the brakes on. We can't build these facilities here at our place because that's going to give us an advantage over some of these other schools," or, "I'm not sure we should be flying private when some of these other schools have to bus to games. And I don't think I should make this much money because other coaches aren't being paid this much, and that's an advantage." Like, it's ridiculous. And the whole thing's kind of laughable when you look at it in the broader business context. I get it. Like, if I didn't have to pay my employees, I'd be pretty happy with things. But sadly, you know, you actually have to pay your employees, and that's the way the world works. And for all the coaches that say now, and look, I love these guys. I mean, I'm friends with them, mm-hmm. and we just happen to differ on this issue. But when they say, "This isn't what it's supposed to be about. This is supposed to be about education and mentoring young people and making them into better adults and all that stuff." Okay, if that's what you think it's about, you know, the doors to Division II and Division III are wide open, and coaching in high school, wide open. There's nothing that's stopping anybody from doing that if that's what you think it's really about. But you know, people say that this is a transformational time, that we've never had this much upheaval, and that's simply not true. And you and I, Rich, have talked about this. In 1984, all the schools sued the NCAA when the NCAA was telling them how often they could be on television. They couldn't cut their own media rights deals, things like that. And they went to the Supreme Court, and the schools won. And now they could bundle all their TV rights with their conference. And Notre Dame could sell them individually. And the money went through the roof, and coaches were paid millions. Strength coaches are paid $750,000 and higher. And nobody said, "Wait a minute, this isn't what it's supposed to be about." It's a multi-billion-dollar entertainment industry that's run off college campuses. And the idea that we can do this, and the essential workers being the players are gonna remain unpaid, is laughable. And the Supreme Court laughed the hardest in the Alston case when Justice Kavanaugh, in a concurring opinion, said, "In any other business, the way the NCAA restricts athletes would be per se illegal, and they're not going to get away with it anymore." And what that was really saying is, don't bring these lame arguments up here next time, because you're going to lose again. And lower courts are going to see that, and they've read it. And I don't think the NCAA is going to fare very well in future antitrust cases when they're trying to restrict athlete compensation. Look, the coaches are dealing with the transfer portal now. They've never had to deal with that. And they're dealing with the players that are making decisions now with money as a factor. It's not the only factor, but money's now a factor, and it was never a factor before. And they've not had to deal with that. Well, guess what? You've got to deal with it now. And that's just the way it is. And they can complain about it. I get the complaints. But pretty soon they're going to stop complaining, and they're going to start figuring out how to deal with it, because this isn't going anywhere.
So then what's the impediment, Jay Billis? I mean, you're describing a totally broken dam and the D1 board of directors with a sandbag out there as as the dam has totally broken. I mean, the president of the University of Georgia is the chair of the board, and I'm sure they've got enough lawyers to tell them what time it is in the same way that you are. What's the impediment here? Mark Emmert's leaving. What do you think, Jay?
Well, like, impediment to what? Like,
to implementing what you're talking about. Just saying, realize what time it is and come up with a system and a unionization process and contracts and some sort of uniformity that makes this somewhat of a level playing field for some people, as opposed to catch as catch can. Like, what do you think?
Well, there are a couple things. Well, first of all, the reason they're not doing it is they don't want to, because they know that the players are worth more than they are, and so asset allocation and money toward procuring talent is going to be funneled differently than it is now. Right now it's funneled to coaches and administrators and for facilities and all these other things. And they know that model's going to change. And talent procurement is going to take even more money, and it's going to take money away from other things. And the NCAA structure, they look at that as their money. Like, that's our money. You know, they don't look at it as the athlete's money. Where it should be, Rich, and where I think it's ultimately headed in this, but when everybody wraps their head around it, is just simply signing players to contracts. It's ludicrous to believe that these institutions and the coaches and all that, they know exactly whom to recruit and exactly whom to put in the game when they want to win. But they don't know how much the players are worth to them. They know exactly what they're worth. And you know, they make decisions on what to pay employees every day at these schools, and they have tens of thousands of employees at each one of these institutions, and they're not sitting up at night going, what do we do? What do we pay the president versus the head of food service? Because both of them work really hard. In fact, the food service head works harder than the president, and you know, sweating over those hot pots and pans, and that's unfair. And you know, if the NCAA was really worried about a level playing field, we don't have one now, by the way. If they were really worried about that, there'd be spending caps on facilities and there'd be revenue sharing. And there's none of that. All of these institutions are market competitors against one another. They're market competitors for talent, whether players or coaches or administrators. They're market competitors for media rights dollars. And they're certainly market competitors, you know, when they play against one another. They're all trying to win the most, make the most money, and advance their institutions through the use of athletics. They're all trying to do that. And so, you know, how is it that we could say, well, it needs to be fair with regard to athletes only? That's the only area of this business we're going to have a spending control. Everything else, free market, do whatever you want. It's an absurd notion. And, you know, the Supreme Court finally said so. It took the legal system a while to catch up to the fiction that the NCAA's put out all these years. But now they're having to deal with it. And look, do I think that this thing by the board of directors is going to work? No. You're not going to stop the flow of money in this. It's not going to happen. And people can say, hey, you know, we shouldn't be building these facilities. We shouldn't be flying private. We shouldn't be playing 9 o'clock games in the middle of the week. Every game shouldn't be on television. They can all say that, but they're all doing it. And I used to laugh when administrators or coaches would say to me, how can these games be on at 9 o'clock? And I would say, look, respectfully, like we don't tell you when to play your games. You can play all of them at noon on Saturday if you want to. All we said to you was we'll pay more for 9 o'clock on Tuesday than we will for 1 o'clock on Saturday. And you said, okay, we'll play on Tuesday. That sounds great. You know, we didn't force them. Media rights company or media companies don't force these schools to play at certain times. They offer more money to play then, and they agree to it. You know, we don't force the coaches to do halftime interviews. It's in the contract. We pay them money to do that, and they said yes. And then they want to complain, well, I don't want to do an interview at halftime. Well, we don't care whether you want to do it or not. You agreed to it, and we paid you for it. You know, that's sort of the way this stuff works, and somehow college sports acts like everybody's impinging upon their rights here, and nobody is. And again, like if any of these schools, if Ohio State decides this is not for us, they can play in Division II or Division III, and we can have the Buckeyes versus Amherst at the Shoe for free admission and no TV, and see how Buckeye fans like that. I don't think they'll like it, and I don't think they'll stand for it. But everybody can talk all they want to, but their actions show that they want to participate in this multi-billion-dollar entertainment industry run off their college campus. But they just don't want to pay their employees, being the players. And that's just not going to work.
Well, I guess we've reached the end of the interview and the point where I always ask you if you want the job. This is the first time the job is actually up there. Mark Emmert's leaving. Would you take it over, Jay? I mean, and implement everything here? I know maybe something have to freeze over that's very warm, but what do you think? Would you do it? You want it?
So you're asking a person, would you like to take the helm of a ship that the last captain ran aground? You know, the answer would probably be, for most sane people, no. But look, I've always said, and I've said this to you, like I've always wanted to help. So if I could help in any way, they'll never ask me, so I don't have to worry about it. because you know, it's a job that requires it's a job that requires being honest about the business. And the business is a multi-billion-dollar entertainment industry. And each school is responsible for educating their students. The NCAA office has never educated a single student. That's not what they do. Just like they've never, you know, they can talk about health and safety and medical well-being and all that. They have never operated on or rehabbed a single athlete. That's not what they do. The schools do that. So that's up to each individual institution. What they really do is they run a really good basketball tournament, and they do it really well. Outside of that, the NCAA doesn't do a whole lot of things well. What they really do is muck up a lot of things and screw up a lot of things. But they've had a free ride with regard to athletes for over 100 years now, and the free ride is over. And you know, look, nobody turned their TV off last year with NIL and the transfer portal. Not one TV got shut off. And that what we were told, that as soon as athletes get more than the scholarship, it's over. You know, nobody's going to watch anymore. The product's going to diminish. And the Big Ten is about to sign a contract for their media rights that'll be worth over $1 billion a year and pay each institution in that league $70-80 million a year, whatever it is. So, you know, the idea that people think that this is not going to continue to increase in value and continue to do well because live sports is, if not the most valuable thing in media, it's one of the most valuable things. And it's not going anywhere. It's only going to get bigger and better.
Jay, you're the man. Look for my call again. You be well. Hit him straight in the meantime if you get a chance. Thanks for the call.
All right, brother. I'll see you in July when I get out to L.A.
Always. You know you've always got a spot here. Thanks, Jay. You take care. See, we'll chat before the draft, too. That's Jay Billis at Jay Billis. So there's that. Let's take a break. We're very late for Bob Ryan, and I don't like being late for Bob Ryan. We're back in a moment right here on the Rich Eisen Show. Let's talk Sleep Number, people. We all know quality sleep is essential. I'm just not myself when I don't get a good night's sleep. That's why the Sleep Number smart bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. For instance, my side of the bed, my Sleep Number setting is 60. My wife's side of the bed, her Sleep Number setting is 70. Two different numbers, same bed, but we get the same great sleep. So make sure you get your Sleep Number bed right now because you will absolutely love it. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now you can save up to $800 on select Sleep Number smart beds for a limited time. That's right, $800. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com. Check it out. Sleep Number. You won't regret it. Let's talk O'Reilly Auto Parts, people. Or as you might know from their jingle, O-O-O, O'Reilly Auto Parts. They're in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offers friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. Because you know when you need your car fixed, you need somebody who knows what they're talking about and is helpful, has a smile on their face, and gets you back on the road. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. The team at O'Reilly Auto Parts can test your battery for free in or out of your car. If it needs to be replaced, they'll help you just find the right battery for your vehicle. Need your windshield wipers replaced, a brake light fix, or a quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. Whether you're a car aficionado or an auto novice, you will find the employees at O'Reilly Auto Parts knowledgeable, helpful, and the best of all, friendly. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at O'ReillyAuto.com/Eisen. That's O'ReillyAuto.com/Eisen. Bob Ryan here on the Rich Eisen Show. Our terrestrial radio audience is back with us here on Peacock and Sirius XM. I mean, I'm just looking at the cover of the book. And you say, don't judge a book by its cover, but you can with this one because there are the scoring sheets that are on there, including one that looks like it's autographed by Reggie Jackson.
Okay, that's a great story. So this is what I say when I have personal anecdote. First of all, Reggie and I had a good relationship. I don't know why he took to me, and when he was covering, I was with the Yankees, and we had a nice little relationship. Fast forward from the night that he hit the three home runs in Game 6 in 1977, which I covered that game for the Boston Globe in the World Series of 77. Fast forward 26 years. It is the ALCS of 2003. Reggie is traveling with the Yankees. He arrives in Boston. I bring my scorebook to have him sign this. I show it to him. We're standing in front of the dugout, and Yankee dugout. He grabs the book, runs up to the batting cage where Joe Torre is standing, and is gesticulating and pointing to it and pounding his chest. And it's almost like he's saying, you know, Joe, I used to play. Did you know that? And showing him the book, and then he runs back and he signs the book, and you can see that signature. You got to believe he practiced that 1,000 times.
Oh, of course.
And the highlight, folks, is it's Reggie Jackson, Mr. October, and then in the loop inside the capital J, number 44. I mean, how cool is that?
And is that the score sheet from? It looks like from his.
Oh, that's it. That's
from the three home run game.
I scored in 1977. As I said, that's from my first book in 1977. I'm into my 10th book this year, in 2022. And there was something from each of the 9 books that we wrote when we and I say we because it very much is a collaborative process.
Yes.
That when we wrote the book.
Bob Ryan here on the Rich Eisen Show. I don't know. I mean, and that's why I can't wait to dive into this, Bob, is it's you know, old school. And I know I sound, you know, frequently on this program, get off my lawn about the shift and all the stuff going on in baseball now where it's just a walk, a home run or a strikeout like so many times. And I just we're talking about exit velocity. And this just reminds me of a different time and how the sport has changed. What do you make of how the sport is
today? Launch angle. Or spin rate.
I know, right? I
mean, I'm with you. I'm not happy with the way the game has, I won't say evolved, I'll say devolved. I'm not happy with it, and I'm hoping that somehow we can get it reversed in some way. I'm not pleased with it at all. But this speaks to a more relaxed and happier time and a more sensible time in baseball, for sure. I'll give you an example of what's in the book that will never be seen again. On the 25th of September 1977, the Red Sox were playing their last road game of that season in Tiger Stadium. Reggie Cleveland took to the mound. 18 hits later, he had a complete game 12-5 victory, in which he struck out one, walked no one, and had 2-3 ball counts, deftly scattering 18 hits. I don't think we're going to see that one again. That's the old game.
No, I'm with you on that front as well, you know, Bob, because I just remember a different time where the game was more wide open and the game was more about stealing a base, about a hit and run, about making sure somebody's in, you know, hitting the gap, not putting four outfielders in there because the analytics says something like that, or. We're just and I could see again the metric on this show that I try and plug into what fans of this show want to hear or see, and the metrics I could see is our YouTube page in this 21st century. I could see what people want to talk about or what's interesting them to them, and the only baseball items that rate is when I rant against Angel Hernandez or Dan Bellino massages Madison Bumgarner's pitching hand while staring into his eyes. Like, that's what rates right now for baseball.
Well, it's depressing for me. It's scary. I nothing's forever. You know, this is our oldest team sport in America. The organized baseball leagues go back as far as the 1860s, and certainly the first real one that stuck was 1871. So we go back well over 150 years, and it was our national pastime. It is no longer. We know that. I think it has things in it that no other game has. Generations change, things change. I remind people that on the onset of the 20th century, the three most popular sports in America, without any question, right up to 1960, roughly, were baseball, boxing, and horse racing. Mm. Now, we know what's happened to the other two, and let's salute Strike Rich, or Rich Strike, whoever his name is. Gosh. I watched that race, too. But we know what's happened to the other two, and it would be folly for baseball to think that the changing tastes of a 21st century population wouldn't consign baseball to the dustbin as well, if they're not careful about the product they're putting out there. I think we both feel that way.
And then I am remiss in one other, I guess, baseball story that people, it resonates with them, and this is a good one, is Ohtani. Whenever we talk about Ohtani, people kind of dig that. Grand slam home run, Oppo last night. This guy is unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And him and Trout together, finally. This is some good stuff, right?
Well,
good stuff.
We had a full showcase last Thursday in Boston. He went 7 wonderful innings, striking out 11, just dazzling people. I mean, by the second inning, I'm sitting there looking at this. I said, he's got one guy on a fastball. He's got another guy on a slider. He's got another guy on a straight old-fashioned curveball. He's got another guy on a splitter. I said, when's the changeup coming? And this is before the second inning was over. He had struck out 4 different people on different pitches. And then, of course, he gets 2 hits. He hits the ball to the 420 sign in center, and he hits one off the wall. It was the full showcase for the most part. He's extraordinary. And of course, they had a wonderful note in their notes that this is the first time since 1919, and you can guess who, that where the starting pitcher batted in the top 4 spots in the order.
Bob Ryan here on the Rich Eisen Show. I asked this question for my wife, who's right across the way, and you read Bob all the time, right?
Oh, so, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, hey, you're smiling like this is your childhood basically coming to life right there. I don't mean to date you, Bob, but this
That's
is the
okay.
truth.
Okay, I like it.
Okay. What's your favorite Fenway moment?
It would be the combination of games 4 and 5 in 2004. From the 9th inning on, when Millar earned the walk off Rivera, Dave Roberts stole the most famous stolen base in Red Sox history and one of the handful of most famous in all of baseball history. And then Bill Miller singles up the middle and ties it up, and then we then go into the 14th and Poppy hits one out. And then the next day, which was a wonderful, just incredible baseball roller coaster, the 14 innings. Tim Wakefield is and pass bowling with Varitek, the winning run around the third before he finally strikes out Ruben Sierra, and then Poppy gets a 10-pitch at-bat, blooper single to win. 2 games took over 11 hours, Rich, and ended on the same calendar day because Game 4 ended after midnight and Game 5 started at 5 p.m. And the combination of them, and, of course, the whole drama of it, the Yankees, and we didn't know how it was going to be fulfilled, but we knew that, you know, something might, very interesting, might be happening, and of course we all know that it did. I would have to say that. And one other, though, I have to cite, and I was present in 1967 on final day when they beat the Twins to win the pennant and culminating the great impossible dream season, in which I started out being indifferent to the Red Sox as a college student and wound up going to 27 games, most of them with my then girlfriend, now wife of 52, almost 53 years. And that day will be remembered by Red Sox fans of a certain age forever, October 1, 67.
You're smiling broadly over there, Suze, just listening to this whole thing.
I'm smiling. Part of me is laughing because you're sick to your stomach hearing this because you're such a Yankees
fan. Yeah, it's okay, though.
But also, Bob, it's the way you and Leslie Visser seem to remember every single pitch, every single at-bat. It's insane, and I'm laughing because I don't remember what I did yesterday.
Well, I mean, I'm fortunate in that I have that one aptitude. I won't say skill. It's for words. There is a part of me in my brain retains this arcane information, and because I have no mechanical skill, I do not know what I could have done for a living if I didn't possess this other aptitude. No, I'm very, very serious. I'm hopelessly mechanically inept. I'm overwhelmed by the technology of the day. I'm lucky I know how to tweet. I do know how to tweet, but. I'm just fortunate. Words and playing with them and rearranging them are what I can do. And then these things stick in my mind that is kind of bizarre, but thank God they do.
Well, I mean, scoring also helps, right? I mean, scoring helps you remember stuff and jar your memory, not just looking at the score sheet, but it does actually help you remember, well, this was out, that was this guy was on, that sort of thing, you know?
Oh, yeah, that's true. And, you know, of course, one of the things about scoring, it keeps you in the game, it forces you to concentrate, and so if something sticks, I happen to think it's a lot of fun, and at the end, but yes, it's part of, but once again, it fits in with my limited aptitude. That's what I got. I don't have anything else to offer.
I'd be remiss, Bob, before hanging up with you, Bob Ryan, here on the Rich Eisen Show, if I did not bring up the current Celtics to you. Did not think when you were coming on today that Al Horford and John Havlicek would be in the same sentence, but such is the case.
That was an inspiring, uplifting performance by, and all the more so because when you know that this is one of those athletes that you can point to your kid and say, please, be like him. Do it. Listen to him. Al Horford is for real. Rich, a year ago, you know how his season ended, right, in Charlotte? It ended. It didn't end at the end. It ended in the middle. They sat him down permanently so they could play kids. He was an appendage. He was a surrogate assistant coach. And the Celtics traded Kemba Walker to get him back. And most people just, you know, arched their eyebrow and shrugged. Oh, wow, we want him back. He's done, right? Didn't Charlotte tell us he's done? And look at that last night. I mean, that is just one of the great stories of the year.
I mean, and again, for Brad Stevens to say, I'm going to go upstairs and let's hire Ime Udoka from Toronto and let's figure out what we're going to do with this roster, and the fact that they're now in a best of three against the defending champs after taking that one last night. It's truly, you know, all the Celtics fans that I know from my colleague here, Chris Brockman, my brother-in-law, my son, my youngest son, this is like one of the most enjoyable Celtics seasons they could ever remember.
Well, you know? It has been since January. I can tell you that when the season started, and I told people after a week, they're annoying. You know they're better in your heart, but they're not doing it. Why aren't they playing better? Why aren't they doing what you know they can do? And this was true right up to the middle of January, and they suddenly got the epiphany, whether Amy got through to them or whether they started listening for a change or whatever. Everything fell into place. Tatum started figuring it out. Brown, Smart, who I never thought could be a true point guard, has turned into a legitimate point guard. And, of course, Robert Williams stayed healthy and long enough to make a difference, and which was the big issue with him. And Al was filling all the spots here very nicely. Right now, when they play their best, Rich, they can play with anybody. I'm not predicting winning the series. I'm not predicting the conference finals. I'm not predicting anything. I'm simply saying that there's no team they can't beat. I don't see a colossus. The league doesn't have a colossus team. It's got some pretty nice teams. So they're in the mix, and I think people are enjoying the ride.
And then lastly, how about Tom Brady taking every hometown discount that he gave to Bob Kraft and taking it out of the hide of the Murdochs? 10 years, $375 million deal, reportedly, for him to now be the number one voice in a football booth. Did you ever think that would be the end of the Brady football ride as a player?
No, I won't say it's the last thing, but it certainly wasn't high on the list of things I thought he would do. I thought he would devote all his time to huckstering his product, TB12.
He still can.
You know, it's just a ridiculous, you know, bunch of nonsense. But I thought that's what he would be doing. I hope that I don't care if Murdoch wants to spend that money, Fox wants to spend that money, fine. But I hope they know what they're getting. I can't imagine they're going to get anything more than a glorified Joe Montana, unless there's a whole other Tom Brady that the world has never seen. He simply doesn't fit the profile of an entertaining analyst, as far as I can see.
Well, I mean, all the times that you may have interviewed him, or Shaughnessy, your longtime colleague at the Globe, or anyone else, he was given the Belichick line, right? Give you nothing, say nothing, don't give the other team anything.
Very cautious, very protective of his image, and you know, intelligent. You know, he was intelligent. And my friend Shelley Pierce wrote a good book about him moving the chains, and he went back to Michigan and talked to people, and there's no question he's an intelligent guy. But he's shrewd. I mean, look at the way he's constructed his life. He's not a hermit. He goes out in public, yet he's got an invisible shield protecting him from the public, even if he's standing 5 feet away from you. I mean, he's just been able to do that. Marries a supermodel. He never married the girl, went out with the girl next door. It was always some celebrity, and then Richard Moynihan before her. He marries the most famous model in the world. She makes more money than him. It's an amazing life that he's constructed, and he just glides through it. And I guess this will be the latest chapter.
Well, I guess you also have to now amend that to she makes more money than him, line. Potentially. Although I shouldn't say that. I have no idea. Oh, she's still on top of that. I had no idea. That'll be for another book. In scoring position, 40 years of a baseball love affair. Bob Ryan, let's do this more often.
I'd be very, very pleased to. Good to talk to you.
Would you please say hi to Mr. Tony for me? Will you please do that for me?
I absolutely will do that. Okay. I'm going to be on Around the Horn tomorrow, but I'll convey the message to Mr.
Please do that. That'll be part of the 5 Good Minutes when you do chat with him on that front. Thanks for the call, Bob.
Oh, you're
appreciate
welcome.
It. That's Bob Ryan from ESPN and, of course, longtime sports writer in Boston. Go buy this book. This is going to be great. In Scoring Position, 40 Years of a Baseball Love Affair. I almost brought up Great Aunt Helen to him.
You should have. That's a great story.
I'll tell this story real quick, then we'll take a break.
And then also we have a breaking issue in our family about which game one plays when one is the starting pitcher, which is happening right now. So I need to ask you your opinion on
that. Oh, yeah, the big playoff game, as I mentioned yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. So Great Aunt Helen is in your family,
yes,
right?
My Uncle George's wife.
There you go. And I was just friends with the woman across the way at the time.
Still shooting your shot?
Oh, my gosh.
She made you work. We'll get to that later.
No. Again, that conversation is for a moment when she's sitting in this chair
we
and
tried.
I'm not
she,
here.
She got tight-lipped, yeah. But, you know.
Well, at any rate.
And it's time to break.
She was, no, but Great Aunt Helen was the only Yankee fan of the family,
mm-hmm.
Okay? Everybody else, they're all Red Sox, the whole thing. And so here I am. Susie's friend, in quotes,
yeah, quote unquote,
showing up. This, I believe, it was at a Passover Seder, if I'm not mistaken, your mom's old place in Boston, and the conversation was being had at the table about me being a Yankee fan, mm-hmm. and she's a Yankee fan and a diehard baseball fan, and I think your brother brought up the name of Hawk Harrelson, and sure. She started cursing her head off, and I'm like, oh God, I did not expect that sort of reaction. She was really angry. Your brother started laughing, and I began to realize early on that your brother was a mixer who liked stirring things up when he knew he could stir things up.
Scott? No way.
Exactly. So, long story short, Great Aunt Helen had this incredible autograph book that she took to baseball games since she was a little girl. And she had every major, big-time, all-time great, you name it, their name was in this book, right? Was Ty Cobb in the book or something like that?
Ty Cobb.
Name it. Babe Ruth.
Gehrig.
Name it. They were all in this book, and she brought it to the stadium all the time, including the early 60s when she goes to Fenway Park. And she hands the book to Hawk Harrelson, who was playing at the time, and for him to sign. And he looks through it, thumbs through it, stops on a page, signs it, and hands it back to her. And Hawk Harrelson signed the same page as Babe Ruth.
Oh.
Ruined it. And was.
She would just lose her mind every time my brother would bring it up. And he'd bring it up, of course.
Wow.
Every time he could.
I always think of that story whenever I hear Hawk Harrelson used to call games, but no longer. But, oh, could you imagine?
Here's the question. Who is in possession of this book right now?
Oh, so ready for this? This is
careful.
A nightmare.
Careful.
Okay.
Careful.
Apparently. Her son-in-law sold it for a pittance, and my brother had a coronary.
It is a big big.
It's a whole
to do. Yeah, that's you just touched a third rail family subject over there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But whoever has the book, look at Babe Ruth's page. You see Hawk Harrelson. Put that on the board. All right, we'll take a break right here on the Rich Eisen. I almost brought that up to Bob, but wanted to talk about other stuff. All right, I'll learn about what's going on in my own household when we come right back.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
Judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
844-204-RICH is the number to dial here on the program. So what's happening in our our world, Suze? What's happening right now?
So the Rays of the Sherman Oaks Little League advanced, yes, as you know, because you scored the game last night.
Yes.
To the second round of the playoffs.
By the way, I officially scored.
Official score. I like it.
And you know what? You didn't say to him, and it's so true, that scoring is meditative. It's very relaxing to score a game.
It is. It's relaxing to score a game, and plus you also can remember the sequence of events in a game when you score it. It's great.
I did it because I sucked when I played. So I was a scorer.
So you kept score?
Yeah, and I did it for my brother with...
Were you good at keeping score, Mike?
With our buddy Christy that never called in for me.
What are you better at? Keeping score or doing the board?
I had my own box of pencils. Perfect. Oh, I was like amazing. Oh, I brought my own, like, okay. I had a clipboard. Oh, man. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I was a professional.
You have to have a good pencil.
Yes.
Okay. And you got to keep on.
Yes.
By
multiple
the way,
pencils. You can't have one.
A number two pencil. You can't have like that one where the
mechanical
click
joint.
It.
No. The chick clicker.
What is it?
Chick clicker.
The chick clicker?
Chick.
Be very careful.
There's about careful. Five things I thought you said there, and none of them
were eligible. She almost went full Steve Leaves.
I will never
there.
Go full Leaves. Thank you so much.
She almost went full Leaves talking about Randy Johnson's back.
Hey, listen, we have a crisis on our hands. Can we focus here, please?
Right, sorry. Yeah.
Because Oakwood Elementary boys' fifth grade soccer team.
Giving everyone a shout out here.
Hey, they're asking if Coop's going to be the starting midfielder today. And he is a 3 o'clock game, and he's a starting pitcher for the Rays at 5.
Right.
He went to school after we left today in full uni, including shin guards.
He wants to do it
for soccer?
He thinks he's playing soccer first.
He wants to do a Dion.
Poor Brian Glucksman is wondering. He's texting me.
He wants to be a Dion?
He wants to be a Dion.
Yeah, he's texting me.
There's no helicopter to take him to the game.
So is that the reason you want to do it for transportation purposes?
Excuse me, guys. Excuse me, guys. Let's focus. Should he play both?
Yes.
Should he play two? Or does he play the first half? You know Cooper. He's not going to want to go and cheer on the team on the sidelines. Do we pick him up at two? Do we let him play soccer? But what happens if his circle changeup is shady?
By the way, you're giving away all the secrets. Let's not let's
tell them what you think. The Sherman Oaks Little League is recording this and saying, look for the circle change.
Yes.
They might.
We got a banner in the outfield.
With their Apple Watches.
Yes.
What are we going to do? I got a breaking news.
I'm
going to
be
here.
The John Schuerholz. Do we all get a vote? No.
Do we all, the four of us get a vote on this?
No.
He do both? Is it 100?
He can do both.
Then that's it.
He's not going to do both.
Why?
But hold on. He's got, the game starts what time?
The game is at 5. First pitch, 5. Not 5:05, but 5.
He's got to get there to warm up. He's the starting pitcher of a playoff game.
It's Moore Park. You know, it could be traffic.
Oh,
it could
you
be
can
Where's the soccer game at, though?
It doesn't matter.
It does matter.
No, guys, first of all, I don't want to give the full world the GPS to our life, okay? Number two, I don't want at all my son being gassed, period. They played yesterday. They advanced. They crushed it. They played a great game. They're depending on him to focus on being the starting pitcher against the best team in the league. He is not going to be running around as some middle infielder so some kid can take him out like spikes up like Ty Cobb.
Apparently his son.
No way. Somebody's going to yellow card him out of a start.
So you're saying soccer doesn't mean as much.
Our son's a gamer, and I respect him being a gamer. He gets that from you instead of me. I'm a gamer when it comes to the mic, when it comes to actually wanting to compete and beat the crap out of somebody.
This doesn't sound like...
That comes from your side.
Apparently, TJ, apparently last week I made a 16-year-old very upset because I was unhappy with his umping.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a kid from high school was filling in as an ump, and she's giving us
yelling at him.
By the way, while I'm on the set of the NFL draft, I'm getting texts like she's watching Angel Hernandez squeezing my child's strike zone.
Susie doesn't like a loose strike zone, you know?
No, I'm bringing down the curtain on soccer for the day.
All right, I'll let Brian.
I don't know, man.
By the way, our coach is probably listening.
Can we put that up as a poll?
I'm going to let Twitter handle this.
Why not?
No. There are certain things where I've got a peremptory and this is it.
He's got a playoff.
The kid is dressed. He's got his uniform on. He wants this, Rich.
Excuse me. Let me spit truth.
Okay, please do.
The center of the family universe is sitting across the way.
I'm looking at her.
Okay.
Yeah.
The Rock the person,
my
who,
wife,
everybody, my wife,
my wife,
Susie is sitting right there. She makes 98% of the decisions of our household. There are, if I have a 2% decision making, this one is mine. And I will, and if somehow, some way, the U.S. men's national team loses a World Cup soccer game 15, 16 years from now because I didn't let my son play in this game, I apologize to America. That ain't happening, okay? This is not going to affect anything. And I'm not saying that my son's going to win a World Series game later on because he's pitching today. I'm saying he's going to win multiple World Series games because he's pitching in this game today. He is a lefty, and he is throwing strikes, and I can retire on this stuff 20 years from now. All right?
Mark Marinovich.
End of story. 10 years from now, I'm retiring.
Rich can't believe this kid is his.
So
Richard Williams would let Venus and or Serena
today,
play.
He is starting today. He is focusing on today. His teammates are depending on him to focus on today, and he can play soccer another day.
You think LeVar Ball would tell Lonzo no?
Yes. By the way, you don't have to finish that sentence. The answer is yes.
You think T. Morant would tell Ja he couldn't play both?
How do you not even have the LeVar Ball? Like he's feverishly, because you have your glasses on.
Put your glasses on, Mike.
Put your glasses on, Mike. No wonder he can't find anything.
I'll do it for him. Big Ball of Brand, back here to stay.
Big Ball of Brand, we here to stay.
That's me. That's me right now.
You know what I'm thinking? God forbid he got hurt. We'd have to tell his team that he couldn't play.
He couldn't play because he
went up 12%.
Because he played in some regular season soccer game.
And he's a first baseman when he comes out.
Of course, he's playing three positions. He's Coop Toddy.
You could, I mean, come
on. He's pitching and hitting today.
He could get hurt doing anything. Like
Brian
Pacino
wants to
sitting,
call in. I think the decision is made.
Like Pacino saying, he, you get killed walking your doggy. Like, hello? Anything could happen.
Yeah.
You play to win the game.
Correct.
Play to win the game.
It's the playoffs, man.
Coop wants to play.
Tucker,
let
playoffs.
Coop play. Let Coop play.
Playoffs.
Let Coop
there you
play.
Go. Thank
playoffs?
You.
Playoffs?
Let Coop
thank
play.
You.